Yes.
Trusty Gray.
Well, I think no. Okay, any member of the public may address and ask questions of the board relating to any matters within the board's jurisdiction, providing the matter is not on the board's agenda or pending before the board. Does that make any sense?
Good morning, Al. President and Vice President, and members of your board. My name is Bill Senna, and with the wisdom of our school district. I'd just like to thank your staff for working with our staff and Nancy McHugh here from the district, our district. I believe we have a meeting coming up tomorrow morning, so we're going to be able to keep things moving, I hope, towards the high school. I would hope that some of the following this meeting that we have tomorrow morning, that we can have a joint meeting between both boards. So, appreciate your help in getting engineering studies underway with the sites referred to in one of the letters. Appreciate your help.
Thank you, Bill. Any other gentlemen, young ladies, on the public? Okay. Yes, Mr. Gentleman, please put your hand up your from the store and if you do the other. Before we have my take that one first and discuss the reasons for what we're doing for that way for the whole agenda.
As appears, there are some confused books, and quite frankly, I'm not sure
explain how SOAR could affect the annexation procedures.
Inside the urban reserve line, the vast majority of the planning process remains unchanged. You'll notice on the initiative there's one exemption for a small parcel of ag land that's virtually in the center, almost geographic center of the community of the home. And that is exempt, so that will not be affected at all by SOAR. The open space areas remain open space. They would be because of the knowledge they're defined as having typically sensitive habitat areas, important for the watershed drainage kinds of issues. So those, that would be covered in SOAR. Anything other than residential rules or rules would be unaffected by SOAR. Through the annexation process, again, same sorts of things apply, so that if you're going to change the four land use categories, rural, residential rural, agricultural rural space categories, the way that works, and I think this is one thing that we probably could have done a little better job on presenting to the chamber meeting, is the process remains actually very similar to the way it is right now. The biggest difference is before making a decision, the supervisor would be responsible for putting a ballot on the issue. So, for example, if you had a project that didn't have the support of the supervisor and it didn't have the support of the local community, it would be forward at their store. One of the things we found was confusing that was presented by the other side, but they tried to sort of mute the existing ability to put initiatives, land use initiatives on the ballot that exist, and they tried to make some point that CEQA and SOAR would be abrogated, which simply isn't accurate. What we have now is the way the Supreme Court reads this is that people have a right now to put initiatives on the ballot, either to propose or support an initiative. And when an initiative makes the ballot, under current law, that is actually said to take place as much as people review for the actual, and keep in mind, this is just for the actual land use change in category. The process will still go forward with the same level of review that it does now. So you still be involved with CEQA. Still be involved in all the sorts of reviews that take place, basic plan systems that take place, with the exception that in those four categories, you cannot go forward without a formal approval. And let me just discuss the time frame. We have one exception that I think you should be very aware of, is that your ability to do this actually and preserve special ability to do this inside. And that is an extension of public sewers. So sewers, water treatment plants, all those sorts of related facilities that you folks are responsible for are completely exempted for us. And that's actually under state law.
Right. So as I understand summing it up, the effect that SOAR would have is that if the annexation was bad for any ag land, and their proposal as part of the annexation was to change that use from ag to similar designation, that's when the SOAR component would kick in and require a vote.
Yes, pretty much. You can move that designation. For example, specifically, as long as it's not in conflict around the land, change that to, for example, open space and open space ag. So though there's some flexibility in that. And there's also, as I pointed out earlier, there's a number of exemptions. So if it's outside those exemptions, and it's outside sort of that those trade-offs, then that's not true.
I have a question. Reviewing Simpson County General Plan, it is very strongly answered to serving ag land or the land within the county. And not in the past, in my world, from China, it always existed quite substantially within the existing land use zones in the general plan.
We like the general plan. And we were absolutely correct in that making very strong statements of preservation of ag land. And in fact, that's exactly what SOAR does, is simply add some substance to that so that the actual sort of piecemeal exceptions that avoid. You have these basis of principle that we have these land use categories, people who work through the public process and establish. And SOAR doesn't change any of those at all. What it does change is the ability to first of all, really, in practice, it reinforces those very policies that we discuss.
So any kind of change within the county, then it has to go to those people all within the county?
No, not any kind of change. Any time there's a change involving those four land use categories, converting them into urban uses, if they stay in, if they go through the sorts of things that we talked about, they're exempt, but if they're going to be converted into urban uses, then that time you would have a vote.
And another question came up. It is people in Fast Road asking, how do the people in the ball look with what's going on in Fast Road to tell people on the issue of the North End?
Well, of course, the city of Fast Road has the autonomy, and so the fact is that it's in the city of Fast Road, it's supposed to be in the home of the town. On the other hand, you have a finance clause attached there at all, and development takes place. And I think some folks here really know very well how this works, where you have development that takes place in the area, in other areas, and that would impact the level of services for the home. For example, the sheriff's association. You have a large growing population, and we have, quite frankly, the moment when I'm really taking, from my point of view, is to see the shortage of the service. So what happens in other areas do affect the residents. I believe that having participated in a number of elections, the voters make good decisions the vast majority of the time. And I believe that the folks that there is a common interest, the constituency remains the same. It does not change. So people, essentially the people that elect the leaders to make decisions for the whole county are just going to be making the right decisions. And that becomes a change.
Okay, do you want to jump through the agenda?
Well, I think what my point is further board questions and public comments. And bring back the board for decisions we're having one scheduled for a special meeting for the board to come up with a state, a board with a statement regarding the board meeting. So, my first line of my case was a public comment. I'm excited.
I just want to thank you for the opportunity. So my comment that I have put together relates specifically to my concern of SOAR and its impact on our own community and my involvement in some of the civic activities in the community. First, I think Macomo is a prime candidate for county sprawl. And despite warnings from the state and the county about severe resource limitations, the evidence is we're going 2 to 3 times the county max cap growth. And we see the sprawl coming up from San Maria and from Pittsburgh. And we are going to have to accept the growth and sprawl But my main concern is that the county process for our involvement in these growth decisions don't seem to serve us very well right now. I think the average citizen in the Pomo understands what the county decisions mean from the bulldozer start changing the landscape in our area. Even our local advisory council usually is notified very late of these impending decisions. And I've been at meetings time and again where they have implored the county staff and the county board supervisors to give them time to get involved and to be a participant in these major decisions that affect our community. It simply doesn't happen in most cases that Mr. Hollinger has said by single play they're under the time constraints by state law that they have to process things and they simply don't have time. So often we have such a 2 days notice. And when on that short notice, a few of the citizens go out to speak before the Board of Supervisors, we're told that, well, the comments don't have much influence unless they're endorsed by the local advisory council. Catch 22 is that the Board of Supervisors will make a decision weekly, the council meets monthly, and by the time we get everything done here, it's going to take, you know, 5 or 6 weeks notification, and probably we get 5 or 6 days. So what happens, the bottom line is that the average citizen is very concerned, but it simply gets too complicated and difficult to become involved. SOAR would require that if those systems would be informed, at least those things that require zoning things, we would have a chance to be involved, to be informed, probably months in advance, and we'd see the articles in the local, in the county newspapers and the local papers. We would know the position of the NCAC and the various people who support and who don't support the proposition. So I think we would be well informed, well in advance. And I think that's important. Because right now, the decision process is so good as the Board of Supervisors only in a given Tuesday. 3 to 5 members can decide to make a strong team. If it's a controversial project, and I've been through a lot of Board of Supervisors in a few years of this year, it's usually a one-swing vote decision. That one-swing vote is often power, in my opinion, because you don't have as many checks and balances in county government as you have in state and public government. So that one-swing vote has a great influence on our quality of life and on our natural resources in perpetuity. And it bothers me what might influence that one-swing vote. I think it takes a lot of political will for one of the supervisors to stand in the way of a building boom, for example. We've got to slow down. But it's too big of an impact for a lot of people who are involved in making money. It's a difficult situation because of some downstream concern about our ability to support that development. The other thing is that one swing vote influenced by quid pro quo political favoritism. In other words, who contributes to whose campaign fire. SOAR would simply nullify the opportunity for this political favoritism or short-term economic over the long-term environmental change. Because it would give time to the people to be involved. And the people would not be saddled with this additional pressure of the short-term economic and the political favoritism. So I think many of us who live here believe our quality of life in the FOMO is greatly enhanced by the rural character of the FOMO. Growth and change is inevitable. But I think we can influence that growth and change more with SOAR than under our current system. SOAR is a very simple thing. It gives us to allow us to participate in those changes that require zoning to change. I think it's very simple, it's very fair, and I think it would increase our community and growth in the decision process. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you're aware that all the projects on the mesa have come to the local project and make the comment. And also there's a move by the Board of Supervisors to create area planning company.
That would help. And it would help if we had time. But I know Roger and I and others have, and I've heard our John Mills and people talk to the county staff again about we simply don't have enough time to process. And when we send to the county, Olander and Pamela Coates, there's a state law that requires us to move this process on. We can't stop for 3 or 4 or 6 weeks because, like I said, you know, their decisions are set up for a weekly thing and our community advisor council meets once a month. So it's difficult to get involved and it's difficult to have a private citizen. You're almost disenfranchised because you can't simply get through all the stuff that you're supposed to get endorsed and do what you need. So I don't know, it's a little frustrating to be in. I think the SOAR won't do everything. It won't solve all those problems. But it would make sure that we would be involved. And all of this, not just the 58, but all of this would be involved one of the common things, and talk about the four categories. Lots of other things.
I have another question with respect to SOAR. If I retain all the zones that are on the main right now, it's within the 50 land use plan.
Does that require zoning change and SOAR in the SOAR that would say it must fail the general plan unless the people change it. It takes away the right of that one swing vote to change our ultimate planning tool that we have, that's my opinion, to try and grow, and that's the general plan. So one guy can accept that on Tuesday, and it's not worth that. In fact, in discussing this with one of the board of supervisors, the comment was made by the supervisor, well, right now the general plan doesn't mean a lot. I think that doesn't mean a lot. So there's a lot of work that goes into the general plan.
My opinion would be general plan concept of the Mesa is being followed and development is following that general plan.
Then SOAR will have no impact if it's all the problem with general planning. So SOAR is the most failure of general
planning. And then, I'm confused here because you're saying you don't like SOAR on Mesa, yet all the problems that come in on Mesa right now, the general plan is this way, which I understand you're not in favor.
Oh, I'm not anti-growth. No, I'm not anti-growth. I would like, but I guess what I am is a frustrated actor almost 2 years of trying to get involved and be involved with all these decisions that are pouring down on us and the rapid growth that's coming in. I was at one planning commission meeting, for example, where an item came up on the agenda for a task of error. And the chairman said, oh, we finally got something done, HOMO. HOMO is, you know, it's checking all this stuff right now, and the people of the HOMO don't seem to be able to get involved in trying to do anything. That's my frustration. Pretty much, and I think this is, I mean, it doesn't cloud everything, it doesn't change everything, but it would help in those categories where the people should know when they're changing the general plan and the zoning around them.
Well, boy, that's my whole comment. The general plan is there, and the development put on the fall on the general plan. What you're telling me is that the development come in, it's a lot of the home, a lot of the individual boundaries, but it's following the general plan. And then
some of that requires a general plan amendment, part of the zoning. I mean, we're changing the zones in some of the land. From ag, I know there's a proposal to change from ag land to.
Well, that's general plan amendment.
Yes, general plan amendment. And I'm just saying that the part that requires the general plan amendment of the zoning change, just for the zoning change, should be considered by the local people and have a chance to vote on it. That's all SOAR would do. I mean, it's pretty simple. I think a fairly simple, fair thing to ask.
Yeah, well, you're reading from the minister, they want to turn it into cover and go to.
Well, it's hopefully that it will slow down the type of urban growth called sprawl, because we have seen studies done by Bank of America, studies done by Rutgers University that sprawl does not take root. I have personally lived through a great deal of sprawl in Seattle. It's going fast. Once you get started, you can't start it. It's a big impact on your quality of life. And it's a fact of life. We're going to have some. But I have been here. I've seen it. I've been back to try to help my living in this area if I can.
Well, you want to answer any further on the process? Fort Morgan.
We try to work for 3 minutes. I don't believe that happened.
Sorry.
Would you all work in
all the right to help along those lines? I didn't plan to stop a long time. My name is Roger Ward. I live up on Chesapeake Place, which is on the north rim of Black Lake Canyon. And I support SOAR because I think it's pretty simple and it's pretty straightforward and pretty fair. Let me just quote to you from the general plan, the vision of the general plan. This is the reason I live here, and I think this is the reason a lot of us live here. It says, the desire is to protect the essential rural character of the area and protect the continuation of economic agriculture. It goes on further to recognize that we have a limited water resources and that are incapable of supporting unlimited growth. Further, it describes our atmosphere as a peaceful rural atmosphere that still prevails around the Como and villages. It gives an illustration on how that works. And I think SOAR supports that. What the SOAR does is put some consistency and some stability into the general plan that we have that's embraced by this division. If you look to see what's going on a day-to-day basis, when people come in for a general plan amendment, nobody ever talks about division. I've raised that issue a number of times with the advisory council. What does this do to our vision when you chip away and make changes to the general plan? Nobody has that answer. And the issue is further complicated then because that division is relegated to four supervisors, five people. We elect one. So we're getting our general plan changed in a very closed system that's heavily driven by developers. And we're getting the vision of our neighborhood changed by a very, very small group of people. I think that process should be opened up. And I think that's what SOAR is all about. I think we trust people to make the decision about how we want to be made for our children and our grandchildren. And I think SOAR does that for us in a very straightforward, but very fair and very simple way.
Thank you.
Is the agricultural community that is defining the view of the community to support this initiative? Well, the thing that we're talking about is the general plan. It's already been laid out how we want this community to look in the future. And that's fair for everybody. That's fair for the agricultural people, that's fair for the residential people, that's fair for the economic development people. We have a plan. All we're saying is let's have some stability in that plan. Let's not change it on every Tuesday with three votes. That's all we're saying.
But does the agricultural community in general support it? Have you gotten that
action?
Can
Tom, if you have your answer to that, Tom?
Sure.
I would say we have some support. We hope to get more as time goes on, and there's a significant part of the agricultural community that is public to it, and I think they're opposed to it.
Thank you.
the staff includes the teacher and all the game contact people on both sides, but in town, with the teams on each side, and then to the
I would suggest that there should be a consensus on the board to hold that public meeting. That's what I would suggest that there is a consultation by a motion second before you vote whether or not you have to hold that meeting.
Great.
Yes.
Then are you looking for a motion on that?
No. Right.
Do I have a motion?
I know that the board look at the scheduling on the floor. There's that to schedule a meeting for that.
Chamber of Commerce meeting and they have one for the school that I'm running. And they had one last Monday. Some of the accomplishing things that we in our total theory of here that would come forth with the organization.
So tell us that we're not going to get a second.
I can call an alternative motion because it's real. I know as a matter of fact that the FDA has already issued some invitations to speakers to come to the community. What I would believe is that we encourage the advisory council to vote the second meeting and then our people and officers to encourage to take that as a step. It's a much broader issue than the district line that we serve.
Okay, we have a first and a second.
We can do this by voice vote.
Pardon me?
We can do this by voice vote. All in favor.
Is the voice of having the NPC hold a meeting for discussion purposes?
Those in favor say aye.
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 We'll do that motion then. Well, the motion to add is just the NDAP, NDAP, for the group to post the meeting to discuss the disorder.
So we encourage it. You can't say it. We encourage it to be.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Jim, is this going to be here coming?
I think so.
I
hope so.
And we're back to the item number 2-1.
Looked at on the surface by our geologists, and we did
say that it could potentially be significant. We can already find out that if you go in and excavate a number of exploratory holes and through that exploration process, sending the material that comes out of the hole and seeing what's there, see whether it actually bends over into our proposed right of way or not, and whether it doesn't bend over into our right of way, what it seems significant, find that out. And what they found out is that it does not contain significant deposits. I mean, they found a bunch of weathered shell fragments and one church plate. So, at some time in the distant past, some Native Americans probably worked on an arrowhead or some axe there, but didn't leave the arrowhead or the axe. So, they didn't find anything that was significant. The other comment I would make is that this water management extension is primarily for transmission. Time to time, as district staff, we look at areas where we can improve the ability to transmit water from the east side of the freeway to the west side, and there are areas like the front stage. And so this improvement is one of those many, many improvements that we've done in the past, and we'll probably use in the future to improve service to our many right there. So that's the purpose of it. And that's all. If there are any questions for me, I'll be happy to try to help. The other thing is that the specific requirements to provide better service and continuing to re-examine the service was mentioned in the South County update of the general plan for the home area. So it's specifically important to the general plan, which is my first looking. And so I recommend your approval of the document. So if you have any questions for me, I'll have to, if you have to try to answer them, if not, I'll step down and try to answer.
I'm involved with the county in getting their rights for easement, or is that up to that?
Peripherally, I've been involved only peripherally today. The involvement I've had was to examine the letter issued by the county and make a determination whether or not that letter was environmental agency character and whether or not it represented environmental impact to use for the best. I think that this does not.
Question number two is, do you know of any harm that NCSD has done in the past to
is a groundwater resource under the Nacoma Mesa by pumping and distributing groundwater to its customers? And if so, what aren't? And question number three is, based on your knowledge, is it your conclusion that this project will not harm or increase the harm NCSG is doing the groundwater resources under the Nacoma Mesa by pumping and distributing groundwater to its customers? I would request that the complete answers and questions be entered into the written board minutes. I would help out by emailing these questions to ncscis.net.com or netcom.com, and would be willing to cover the cost of the page transcriptions for my questions and get the answer. Thank you.
Right. Do you have the initial study in front of you? Where is
it? Are you now here?
Okay. Going through the environmental checklist and the report, I'm trying to speak by testimony. Do you find any objections to any of the information that I asked in question? But from your own review of the studies that you just quoted, or other resources, that you can give testimony to this board that this negative declaration should not be supported. Everybody here has a checklist, and we're here to take testimony. And John, I'm not saying that you can't, what you're saying you can't correct, it's just the format of giving it is not going to lead to a conclusion. And what we're looking for is testimony here as to whether or not A, the checklist is complete, and B, if the opinions and the page opinions here from our engineer are incorrect, if you can give testimony to the board as to what opinions in the environmental impact of water pollution study are incorrect, then if we can go on to a more discussion of those.
Along on this matter, this matter is very important, and this matter that is and I think Dr. Gibson's question is right.
I think Mr. Snyder is welcome to give his testimony in the process. I just want to be given and corrected towards the environmental checklist, whether the report does support the board or not. And so here's a question that is going to be hard for the board or myself to figure out why they're being asked and what their relationship is.
If the questions are too complicated, I'll increase and simplify them
for everything.
Specifically, in the checklist here, various boxes have been checked concerning water resources and that the fact that there is no impact, those would be
the checklist was passed out at that time.
We have the checklist included. Hydrology and water quality, there's a large number of boxes that have been checked in the insignificant column. And Mr. Garrington specifically lists two studies of which he based this on. And I think we all know that there are more studies. On his letter explanation of responses to the CEQA initial study checklist, he specifically notes that he has based this on two studies. And so I'm attempting to find out whether he limited his answer just on those two studies or whether he looked at other studies, because there is more up-to-date studies than 1991, 93, and 94.
What studies are those?
The ones that he lists specifically are, I listed here in my paper, he's listed engineering fields and rights on the Como Mesa sub-area, San Luis Obispo, California, October 1993. I believe you guys went for the Lawrence District Department that you guys did. And the South County Area Plan Inland Portion, May 1991, and attachment A, March 1994, which is also known as NDFA of the South County Plan.
And what is it that in those studies that would lead to a conclusion that a negative declaration on a water transmission line, that those studies would have an impact on that?
Well, maybe that's where a little bit of confusion is. Those two studies, including the case that you looked at. There are other studies which are listed, you know, basically the DWR study, you know, the three grounds.
And that's what I think what I'm trying to find out is not that there are studies out there, and not, I'm assuming that you've read the studies, and that you have arrived at an opinion that there is information in those studies that would impact the checklist on the environmental impact report. So what I'm trying to do is get that accumulated testimony into the record, precisely what is it in those reports that would relate to an environmental determination on water transmission line that is, from what I understand from the Garrett staff report, is merely to augment the ability of the district to transport water from one part of the district to the other that is consistent with the general plan. Now, if you're saying to the board, and to me or even to the audience, that this transmission line is inconsistent with the general plan, then I'd love to hear it. I think the board would want to hear that and make your determination. And if you were to present testimony to the effect that the transmission line would have a significant effect on the environment, and somehow the checklist is inappropriately checked off, that would be important for the board to hear and make a conclusion on whether or not to accept this negative declaration. So that's what I'm looking at. Not,
well, I think specifically that it's important in environmental determination that all the development information be considered. Jim has listed two studies. There clearly are more studies which are relevant to the groundwater resource and its utilization. The groundwater resource is where you're coming from. We've heard Jim state previously that this pipeline facilitates the district's ability to distribute water to customers. That facilitates the ability of the district to pump groundwater, to increase its distribution of groundwater. And so the question is, basically, has considered all of the relevant information, and I'm trying to find out whether he has looked at these other studies and whether he's come to the conclusion based on which studies, whether there's been any harm to the groundwater resource or whether this project would facilitate, because the fact that it does increase your ability to provide water. In other words, if you don't pay new pipes, then I mean, at some point you're not going to be able to serve water to certain parts in your facility. So as you increase pipes, you increase your ability to provide water, you increase your ability to provide hookups. There's an accumulative impact, and I'm trying to find out if studies have been looked at, and whether in the opinion of your engineer, there will be any harm to that resource. And if there is, in his opinion, harm, then I think that you need a more extensive environmental impact report. If you have looked at the studies and found that there is no harm, then it doesn't seem that an additional environmental study would be appropriate.
Well, just clarify a couple of things. Mr. Gary, I think we'll just speak to those two points. And one is, John, is whether or not this transmission line will have a significant impact on the district's ability to pump water. The issue isn't no impact, the issue is significant impact. I want to make sure that we're all on the same, wavelength as far as sequence is concerned. And does this have the potential for increasing connections? And if that this increase in connections isn't consistent or inconsistent with the general plan, because it's the general plan that sets the population, the density issues, and all those issues, of course, were addressed in the general plan CIR.
I just make one point that the general plan was based on an environmental study, based on documents primarily, I believe, this March attachment A appendix of South County Plan water study. Because subsequent water studies, there is additional information available. And I'm trying to find out whether that information has been reviewed and what the conclusions are on that information and the original study.
So, I think you can ask a question. I just want to make a comment to the board. I don't think the response, though, is critical. What is critical is for the board to receive testimony as to whether or not this line will have a significant impact on the environment and the check of all the environmental concerns that Mr. Gehring has addressed. And whether or not it's inconsistent, I don't think it's, I think it's a fair question to ask if you reviewed this plan or if you reviewed this study. I think those are all fair questions. But the fact that those questions, that those answers are affirmative or negative, is not testimony before this board as to the effect that this project would have on the environment.
Mr. Snyder, if I could ask two questions.
Sure.
Just to summarize. I think they can be answered yes or no, but incredibly big. There are 17 sections to this study, with subsections underneath.
If you're trying to detect what they're doing right there, yeah.
Can you identify any section or any subsection that's been omitted from this report that should have been included?
No.
Okay. Secondly, do you have information to give us at this time that would have dabbled on any single item here? And if so, would you identify the item to give us your testimony?
If these check marks were made based on all of the appropriate studies, I don't have a problem with it. So, on the other hand, if you just check off these boxes without actually looking at the studies, I'd be greatly concerned, and I would think that an additional, more in-depth study of actually being the documents.
So, we're at a time where we get testimony. Do you have testimony on any issue here that casts doubt on the winter months?
It would depend upon whether we actually read the studies or not.
So, do you have testimony?
Well, I guess my testimony is that there are studies that are not listed in the checking out of this box. And I can't tell you whether you've read them or not because you haven't answered the question. If you haven't read them, I would provide that testimony that maybe he hasn't read them. Certainly, I could write a testimony that he from him explicitly them as read. And therefore, there could be information that needs to be looked at that is not. I don't know quite how to answer that. I've read this study. So those are my questions. Sorry that they're not what they're looking for. Yet.
First, it's easier to respond to questions when we get them.
but we will do the best we can to make it on time. The two studies mentioned in the initial study were placed or mentioned there because they're relevant to the extent that they demonstrate that land use issues are in the hands of the county board of supervisors. They went through some extensive research studies adopted environmental documents some years ago, and based upon that document that produced what's known as the general plan for somewhere. So in that sense, decisions regarding numbers of services, density of people, and ultimate water use and draw on the underground basin in the hands of the county board of supervisors. The other thing that that document mentions is that it is the duty of the district to provide for distribution and make improvements in the place of distribution. So this water main is a distribution system improvement, and I do not regard it as a facility that affects a resource extraction. We've already provided to pump the amount of water required by the number of people that are determined by the general plan. This main simply smooths out or makes more suitably available that water during certain times of day. So, perhaps one of the folks you'll recall is Mary Holder. This water main is intended to help out some of her circumstances regarding low pressure and surge and so forth. But it's not intended to produce new water. It's not a well. It doesn't produce new water. Stan and I have a question regarding the DWR studies in 98. I have read those studies. I don't regard them as relevant. As far as the effects on the groundwater basin, which the water main has an effect on the groundwater basin, and that's why I take those boxes. The water main doesn't produce new source, new hookups, or new service. Provide for the folks we already have. But that might be the other question.
Comments, Mr. Jones?
No,
approach to that particular ground doctor that was planned from forward and set.
Everyone, right, thanks. I move that we adopt resolution number 007-36.
No, second.
Can I give me an indication on what you might do with the minutes on this item?
As you're aware, there are two different minute procedures that we have. We have the action minutes, and then we have the tapes. So they're both available.
Right. You have noted that I have offered to have the tape be transcribed for my question and the answer to put them in the action minutes.
I believe that assuming the tape system is working down the actual reflection of the tapes.
Thank you.
One. if we would have to earmark the money for a particular use, and then we would, if we're going to take this way, we probably want to hire somebody to get the study of what we said we need to have. As far as the administrative cost, the law is pretty clear that we would need to do some type of high quality study. In other words, our administrative costs have to reasonably relate to the services that are provided. That type of study can be done in-house. But you know, if we were going to earmark this money for this study, we would want to come up with the cost of that study, you know, and then figure out a rational way of apportioning connection to these two meetings, that amount of money to conduct that study. One of the other options that we're drawn up in was read through this the other day, but there could be a combination. So we could reduce your water retrofits back down to 1 to 1 and then pay the fee towards. So there's a whole lot, a whole big mix out there that could be a combination. You could do a combination. You could just go just to the fee to support some future study regarding water resources. I think you take a look at the back of the book. I think staff would be able to kind of throw it on.
Requirements of the sanitation in the
the cat rather than electric.
Yeah, that's correct. It was made a point where it was glass residue for glass tank vision. There is a glass vision for the gentleman out there. Had a development which county development that there's no water supply. He gave the district extra dollars and a lot of them for it, and there's obligation for the district to provide water to that individual for that development. Which manufacturers do you use in the
district? Yeah, I'm thinking we shouldn't create that. That's big money. That's just nothing to a developer and a lot.
Well, that's the thing. You're restricted for this in your economic situation. For the situation that residents, physical residents can be done for it, and the city can't buy the physical residents and the city will come in place. But here again, it does not create a water supply. And the impact of that, well, two aspects is the residents don't, but here again, the residents are on two more bases. And so the impact would be somewhat minor than 24 hours people one of them will create a surplus. So there is a buffer built into the system right now.
Thank you.
what precipitated Johnson's proceeding. They had a 170-something% increase in their rate, and I would feel that they could do a better job. And that's it.
I'll just address this briefly. Just from an overall perspective, when one thinks of garbage, generally what they think about is garbage collection. But actually, and that's a key component to it. But the other one is it gives you the ability, it doesn't require you to do it, but it also gives you the ability to require garbage accumulation on private property. So if you have to kind of think about this from a whole perspective. Therefore, you would have some power if you chose that direction to reflect some of your values regarding garbage accumulation on private property. From this district's perspective, when the district was formed by all of the people, they included your ability to provide garbage service. So, to a certain extent, people were gratified that power. But when special districts got seated on LACO, your power to demonstrate that your powers got bifurcated. Okay, separated. I was just going to do that. You have one set of power that we now consider active powers that are practically to provide water, sewer, substream, lighting, drainage, some drainage. The other power is held in a category called latent powers. And those were the powers that we weren't actively providing at the time we received from the commission of the last commission. So those require us to go back to last for the active. And that's what you saw in the Templeton, the petitioning the Lapland Commission to activate that power. Now, assuming that you had the power and you were looking down the line, and Lapland was to approve the district's petition, that would set an event, a number of decisions for this board to make. Okay, quite a few of them. One is whether or not you would want to include the accumulation of garbage on private property. That's when that issue would be addressed. The second issue that would be addressed is how do you perceive garbage? Would you perceive it as being a mandatory obligation or as an elective obligation? In other words, do the residents, are they going to be required to receive garbage collection, or are they going to be one with the idea that they can elect volunteers to take garbage?
But it's an obligation.
Selected. In other words, people have a choice to either sign up for it or not. The second question that you would have to arrive at is how do you want to implement the garbage collection? There are two directions. You have three choices. One is that you can become an operator. You can buy the truck, hire the staff, and actually go into business. That's the same way that you water and sewer. The second choice is, I'm listing these down as a code, so I'm not concerned with my preference. The second choice is to retain the services or contract with a public agency to provide the services. I can contract with San Maria, contract with Randy, or anybody else, any other public agency to provide that service. And third, you can enter into franchise agreement with an existing hall. Now that is the typical choice that many agencies take is to contract with a franchisor to provide the services. There's a caveat though that when you do get that authority, you will be required for a minimum of 5 years to honor the existing franchise. If you can't renegotiate that franchise agreement. So some of the agencies that I have worked with have been very successful in jumping right in there and renegotiating franchise agreements so that they got the agreement they wanted to just sit in there in quote the county agreement. And lastly, you're going to have to negotiate a franchise agreement. And you're going to be required to try to figure out what level of service that we want. Agencies that have taken over the franchise, my experience is that their boards have been fairly community-oriented. They have required community collection days, community education, and other related community activities relating to drivers and cleanup of the community. Oceana is a prime example of it. They're nationally noted for their success in that area. Lastly, there's also some cost to this now. When you take over these authorities, you also have to take over the obligations that the state legislature has created for the district. Basically, that's known as AB 939. You might hear that cost around as the buzzword for garbage collectors. And basically, what that has to do is source reduction. The state is mandated, the state legislature has mandated that the solid waste component of landfills be reduced. And in that regard, you have seen now some new collection methods being implemented. Not only do you have now garbage collection, but garbage has been redefined as a specific type of garbage, using kitchen garbage, the wet grime stuff. Then you go into green waste and recyclables, and that's the typical way that these agencies are meeting these solid waste reductions. And you would, of course, be setting rates and fees for all those types of services. And you'll be taking on some responsibility for meeting it additionally. And you probably, those of you that went to the Templeton lab of me meeting, you saw it was a heavy emphasis on the 8939 from the lab of the initial. Judge passed me a note here regarding service outside of the district, and there would be possibilities that the district could. Now, this is remember, we're now talking a year down the line, so you don't sort of think that all these things kind of fall into place. But once you have the garbage authority, you have enacted the appropriate ordinances, you have enacted the appropriate franchise agreements, it may be possible. It's going to take two to dance to this, so just kind of remember that. We don't necessarily control the fate, that it would be possible to enter into outside service agreements, you know, with other populated areas that are closely associated with the district. I think Galaxy Park is one that knows about and related to that we could, you know, provide garbage service there. The real question to me as to whether or not those type of events are going to occur is whether or not we elect a garbage process or procedure that's dramatically different than what the county provides. Otherwise, it's not going to make sense to the Galaxy folks who want to participate in any of our procedures. You know, if we go to mandatory, if we like it. One of the things about mandatory garbage collection is that, in my experience, it has resulted in a weight reduction. Now, yes. Of course, those people that aren't taking garbage, it's restricted to a new fee. But if you spread it out, it has pretty much of a significant impact on rates. And that's where the barrier there. I don't know what the current rate collection is here. Let's just say it's 50% of people, which is usually somewhere historically where you'll find this area. Somewhere around 60% are volunteer garbage, have garbage collected. Well, you now go to 100%. Okay. What you find is that a garbage truck, if it's collecting four residents on a block, does not spend double the time to collect the other eight. You know, so there is a reduction in the franchisee's costs by providing that service, and therefore it equates into a rate reduction when you go from a voluntary scheme to a mandatory scheme. Now, I know I've covered a lot of ground. The environment is really kind of a complex issue, but it does have one component our supervisor from the month 5 that participates in that mix. And it can result in some anomalies. I think Templeton is a prime example. But one can rate Templeton right now with the green waste and it is somewhere right around $40.
And it would be suggested that maybe the board think about this and so if something the issue is resolved through that book, maybe they'll bring it back to the board at that time.
I'd like to make a comment on this, that we have an excellent garbage, as you call it. I call it trash, because they don't pick up any garbage, and they simply stay away from it. And we pay $31 a month. We have 4 bags or baskets, whatever it is, from the carrier to take out at any given time. And we're very pleased with it. We're very happy with it.
Yeah.
And I think you would get that for us.
Yeah, and the difficult thing that would occur is that because the district would be committing the same garbage service for a minimum of 5 years, there would not be a switch. Unless this board approved the
switch.
Well, what Al is saying is that they're very happy with their current provider. Well, under state code, if we were to take over the garbage collection, we would have to honor that existing contract for a minimum of 5 years. So, if the level of service would not change unless the franchisee and the district could get together and come up with a different contract.
So it brings local control and also the franchisee will come to the district instead of one of the
question about that. When I read Templeton's presentation of the county prison, there was a question about whether the fees would go to the Templeton.
I'll address that briefly. And I can only address it through my experience doing this. First of all, when you think of the franchise fee, you have to think of this in the context of laws that regulate districts. If we collect a fee for garbage, we have to use that money for garbage-related services. So you can't take a franchise fee and say we're going to hog the water from the sewer from that. That's just prohibitive. That's a little bit different than the county. The county does have, in quotes, a typical general fund where they have discretionary allocations. And I mean completely discretionary allocations. We don't have it.
Well, no, you're not in the first place.
Yeah, okay. We don't have that, so we have to use the money for garbage. When county council opines that we don't get a franchise, we can't have a franchise fee, he is opining my way. That we don't have a general fund in which to deposit, and I agree with 100%. That's true. We are different. But generally speaking, when I set up the ordinances, we earmark that money to be returned to the community in the form of cleanup days, pickup days. If you are going to take over some authority in the community area of cleaning up private property, private property, that's where that money goes.
The question is, if we could go franchise, would we get the franchise fee or would it go to the
I can tell you right now what you know
is the franchise fee. But the indicators that they're not going to go along with that?
This is what happened. The solid waste coordinator, Ocon, in her staff report, that we would not be entitled to the franchise fee and requested the county council to address that issue at the last vote here. The county council declined to address the issue. So they didn't say yes, they didn't say no. There was just no testimony taken on that issue. So I don't know where county council is on that.
But
it can be worked out.
Can I verify with you? in the design steps that when it happens, maybe the other procedure, maybe the board would like to take another look at.
I'd like to say that if other board members have a vision that I have in a formal election going to become a city, that it should be moving and assuming more of these services so that at some point it's inevitable. There's other things that need to be given, like if there's something on our lines.
So if they have to go to the next one.
Well, you might want to take public comment on that item if we got it on the agenda. Mr. President?
Yeah.
You may want to take public comment on the garbage issue because it wasn't on the agenda.
Do we have anybody that would like to discuss the trash?
The next item is a formal lighting. President, would you tell us?
It would be curious to me to find out if we went to mandatory collection, how we would comply with mandatory source protection.
Yes. In fact, that is the only true way to comply with the mandatory requirements of collection. Oceano has received word. I'm always kind of cautious in using analogies of different jurisdictions to compare it. There's no way that this can do it. I can tell you right now that the course of Oceano has received some big mandatory collection that they are tomorrow. The other thing I can tell you is the only jurisdiction in the county that has true mandatory garbage collection is Oceano. If you, for example, if you have a water connection and or a developed piece of property with a well, you do receive, or you do pay for garbage when you take your time.
I do know that the Clean Air Act is getting more strength as time goes on, and there is serious talk at county level of health on outdoor burning. And we expect that to come here, although obviously the community has been seen as well. I think if we're not proactive to offer some sort of service, we're going to end up with breaking this law and everybody trying to find trailers and whatever, trucks and all over the
county. Yeah.
Sorry,
sir. Yeah, I think typically all county contracts provide that the waste hauler will offer clean waste collection. I'm not sure how it works here in this part. I think it might be elective that you, or is it mandatory here, that you take garbage?
We're in full garbage. It's the first year of the mandatory.
Okay.
Once you're at, you could have trash, you could have green waste in three bins, and recycle. If you can upload green waste in the big garbage can,
you can pick it up. Yeah, see, the modern, it's not modern, I think they'll get it eventually, but the typical local control garbage collection is that you have a big bin that you're used to. You also have a very similar big bin for green waste, and you also have a similar smaller bin, exactly the same as different colors. For recycling.
Well, the goal here is formal lighting over and overhead is the present county formal lighting district. That's the dark line of the boundaries. The shaded areas are basically the presently outside of the district boundaries. The district presently has the lighting authority as you negotiate with the county. The district wishes to provide the service for a great portion of the home. It's a relatively small operation, revenue-wise, approximately $28,000, which 18,000 is for taxes. This is a property tax supported lighting district. It has its own tax rate for revenues. Expenditures are presently under the revenues, but there's a capital expenditure from the reserve. They have reserved around $300,000, and there's a proposal of $150,000 that goes to the old town line. the pros and cons associated with this. If the board is interested in looking at this, we can come back with a great deal more information. The lighting fixtures range from about $3 a month up to $27 a month. Those are a number of items that we have to investigate and go over that. This is a tax for the lighting district, and if you put in more standards and the revenue comes in, then you will not have to do the revenue to retain the property. If the board decides to take over something like this, it's probably better to policy where budgets will go, probably in thoroughfares, et cetera, not subdivisions. The subdivision one is to establish their own benefit because what has happened with the people of Double Power and Grandi Avenue, they have a voted to establish a loan of benefit, which they provide their own site. So these are some of the things that the board will get involved in. I don't know all the details, but that wide variety of monthly fees we have to investigate is going to help with those are. Some of them are, some of them I don't know. Very hard.
Well, if we took over lighting, we can contract with whoever provides the cheapest electrical service at that time.
But that's correct.
But then you save all of it.
Correct.
And the cost and the main cost and so forth.
Correct. And a little smaller residential boundary will have to just be asked if we'll have an APA with the county provider service. There's options. Anyway, this is brought for information. The board wants us to continue investigating this in more detail. I'll come back to the board with very detail.
With your investigation, would that include the additional dollars? That we would need to maintain the lighting fixtures and also will office help to maintain additional building for lighting?
Basically, maintain the house that lights are maintained, we would probably move the direction that we need to maintain and really help to always do the bid build like this other question. Or less if we have some obligations for providing some service. We're hoping to make our own lighting open. job was to interpret it. Okay. I just want
to be page one in the main and also page one secondly in June.
So we ordered supplies.
Oh, okay. All right.
Very good.
What are we buying from TMC?
We had a bond that was the district had in 1978 to put in a urea well and distribution out there. It's a 125-year bond, and this is the principal of the
okay.
It expired in the year 2010. The interest rate is about 5%, so it really doesn't take a lot of time to pay it off.
I'm just curious about some of that.
Yeah, you'll see the interest payment again in December. We do interest only in December, and it'll come
forward in December. Do you want to do well?
That's the repair at Lockwood.
Okay.
We'll be adjourned to closed session pursuant to Garden Code Section 54956.9. This is the state Homo Green Service District versus Dan Stace, CV number 990547.
I've seen it on TV before. Sorry.